and welcome into the Neil Huntington Show here on this Sunday afternoon. The Pirates and the Phillies engaging for the final game of this series coming up in just a bit. Joe Block along with Pirates General Manager Neil Huntington. Thanks for spending some time with us. I know this is a busy time of year. Just to step back from it slightly for a moment, I wanted to ask you about with the 79 weekend going on here. And for you as a general manager, the players were talking with great reverence about Pete Peterson, the general manager, the architect, really, of that outfit. And through your years, now you're very accomplished, but certainly maybe as you were making your way up into baseball, is there a craft to being a general manager? You see what I'm saying? Like, I think we broadcasters think it's a craft of broadcasting. Is there a craft of being a general manager? Did you have mentors? Look back at, say, what Pete Peterson or other general managers have done in their philosophies, or is there a craft? Is my question.
Well, that's a great question, and there is, but it's about leadership, it's about decision making, it's about surrounding yourself with really talented people that are aligned with a common mission. And so I've always studied leadership, even back when I was a high school or a college player, just studying the game and studying coaching and teaching, reading about the best managers at that time. You didn't read about general managers at that time. That's kind of a later phenomena. But Dan Duquette was the person that brought me to Montreal, and just learned a ton from him. Learned some things from John Hart along the way and Mark Shapiro along the way, and really fortunate to work with some outstanding leaders, some outstanding baseball executives. Learned what not to do in some cases as well from then and from others. Have had the joy of being able to ask the best in our game questions, whether I was a farm director or an assistant general manager, or shoot, an assistant farm director. The opportunity to learn from some really talented people because of the people that I worked for at that point in time. And living in this generation, John Schuerholz is as good as I get. That string of 14 consecutive division titles, and yes, they'll self-admit they didn't bring enough World Series championships home. But to get your team to the postseason 14 consecutive times in this era of free agency and payroll diversification and stratification, just a remarkable job. So, I don't think about my role as a general manager, but it's as a leader and as a decision maker and as a culture builder, and putting this organization in the position to win a World Series. And we have not done that yet. We've done some things that we're proud of, but we have not accomplished our ultimate goal. We're working to develop our people every single day and enhance their ability to impact those around them, both on and off the field. And we recognize we have a lot of work to do.
So that's the craft of it, those things to do. Now, I guess fast forward to right now, and where you're looking to have a trade deadline here in 10 days. The Pirates stand 7.5 games out of first, 3 teams ahead them in the division, 4.5 out of a wild card, but 5 teams ahead to be in postseason position. Anything can happen over the final 2 months, but how do you determine which direction or directions, because we've seen you do that before at the deadline, we're going to add and subtract, but how do you determine that? Is there a magic philosophy, or do you have a gut feel, a little bit of both? Where's the threshold? Because the Pirates have played some good baseball this year. They've also, there's the reality of where they are in the standings. How do you make that decision? Boy, I don't envy that.
You want to be optimistic, and you want to grab a hold of the success we had on the mound for a month to 5 weeks, and a lot of those pitchers, other than Jameson Taillon, were getting Kella back. Are still here, and how do we get them back on track? How do we improve our defense? How do we improve everything that goes into helping them be really good pitchers, as they were for that first month? Then you look at the hitters and see what we've done for about 2 months now, and how do we draw the most out of our pitchers? How do we continue to draw the most out of our hitters? How do we improve our defense? And if we put that together, how do we put that together? Is that team good enough to be one of those teams that sneaks into October and yet ultimately has a chance to win it all? At the same time, you need to be realistic, and how realistic is it that we have enough on this club? And that's where the variable comes in, and we've enjoyed the times in the past. We've been on the inside looking out, and it's been a no-brainer to add to the club. It hasn't been nearly as much fun when we've been either on the outside looking in or just barely kind of hanging on. Those are tougher decisions, and I've taken blame publicly for trading Mark Melancon for Vasquez and unsettling that 2016 club, even though we felt with Watson and other guys we could backfill that back end of the bullpen, and it did not work the way we anticipated. But adding Felipe Vasquez and Rivero at the time, obviously, and Taylor Hearn, we thought was a really good return. We did it again the next year with Tony Watson for O'Neill Cruz, who's one of the best prospects in our system and top 175 in the game. But again, we disrupted that 17 club. Last year, we went big with an effort to win and to win in 18, but also to win in 19 and 20 because of Archer and Kelly's years of potential contribution. And that one didn't work. And so we're approaching this deadline optimistic we want to work to do everything we can to put this club in a position to get to the postseason, because I think if you get to the postseason, history tells us you have nearly as good a chance to win as the best team does. And there is some randomness in October because of that, so that's the goal of getting there. But we need to be realistic about our chances to get there. So we'll walk down all pathways. We're working to make this organization better. Sometimes you make the organization better by making your current team better at the cost of future teams and prospects. Sometimes you make your organization better at the cost of your current team by acquiring prospects that you believe can help you in the future. 16 and 17, we tried to walk down both pathways, and it didn't work as well as we'd anticipated or hoped.
Is it fair to say, in a very simple way, you're open-minded? Well, you just kind of, you know, you're making inroads. You're hearing what other teams want to do, and you just kind of see if something makes sense. I don't feel like you're a guy that tries to make a move and force a move. That if you have a good justification for it, like you said, with Watson for Cruz, you're getting Cruz. I remember talking to the radio announcer for. The Loons, Great Lakes Loons, and he said, I'm surprised they traded Cruz. I had no idea who Cruz was. Now we do. Things like that where, okay, if there's something that really makes some sense here, great. We're going to go this direction or that direction or, like you said in the past, both directions.
Yeah, and this is an interesting time of year. Interesting sometimes bleeds into frustrating from a front office standpoint because that's ultimately what we're here to do. We're here to work to win a World Series. We're here to work to try to do it again if we're fortunate enough. And if we don't get there, then how do we get there? And that takes listening. It takes asking. When a rumor floats or a player is supposedly being shopped, typically all the teams are doing is they're listening when a club calls and inquires. And we've had clubs call and inquire on our young players to see if we wanted to add their veteran players. We've had clubs call and inquire on our veteran players and our really good young players to see if we were looking to add some prospects for 21 and 22 and 23. We've made calls inquiring ways to make this organization better. And, you know, it's interesting to see the rumor mill out there. Really, the rumor mill is just we're doing our jobs. And you're right, we have to be open-minded and we have to be willing to listen and engage. And there are times where you're looking to just make a good baseball trade and value for value. And that's typically when it's major league player for major league player. There are times where your motivation is to move a player because of X, Y, or Z. You've got a player coming behind, or in the small market, mid-market situation, sometimes you can move a player making some money, reallocate that money somewhere else on the club. And then there are times where you're looking to add established major league players. And when you're out front or you're trailing far behind, those decisions are much easier than when you are where so many of these clubs are this year. The National League, there's just a very small number of clubs that aren't within a good two-week stretch. It's just a matter of when your two-week stretch comes and does it come early enough. And we work to be long-term visioned and not necessarily reactionary to a win last night or a loss on Friday. But at the same time, there are only so many days ahead of us. The July 31st single deadline this year will change the variables a decent amount. As clubs that are looking to add can only add by July 31st. They used to have a safety net of being able to add that second left-handed reliever or that bottom of the rotation starter or maybe that extra infielder that they wanted to add. There were guys typically that would come available. Those guys are no longer available. If a guy is on a major league contract, whether it's current or outrighted even, he cannot be traded after July 31st. So teams are going to have to make even the depth moves by July 31st this year.
Got to make your decision on third down now instead of fourth. I guess absolutely. Is the way that we look at it going forward here. We've got to take a break. I got another question about how this all works at the trade deadline for the Pirates and general managers in general on the Neil Huntington Show right after this here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Visiting with Neil Huntington on the Neil Huntington Show. Tarp is on the field at the moment. It's not raining right now, but I guess they anticipate it might as we get you set for the Pirates and the Phillies coming up. One more question just about the trade deadline coming up. You have a large department. This isn't the days of the general manager making a phone call or writing on a napkin, having a cocktail at the end of the day. With the you know the, those days are antiquated and gone. But with a large department, I'm curious, how does this work this time of year with a trade proposal? If it has some legs, some merit, does it come into you? You're talking with other general managers, and then you kind of run it up with the department. They flush it out, try to remove bias, and come up with reasons why and why not. And then what happens, let's say, on July 31st? When's the deadline? 4 o'clock?
4 Eastern? O'clock, yes.
Okay. Let's say you get an offer at 3:58. What happens then?
It's too late at that point, reality-wise. But so the process really began last August 1st. As we got through last trade deadline, we began to prepare for the postseason, ideally. But you began to prepare for the offseason. You're evaluating your scouts. You're evaluating what you just did, what you feel about it at that point. Was your process sound? Did you miss something? Did you overvalue something in your process? And again, now over time, that gets played out on the major league diamond or in your prospects that you've acquired or traded. In the off season, you begin to plan your scouts deployment, and we typically look at the major league teams that we anticipate being good, and we try to see their minor league system early in the season. So we've got multiple looks on prospects that we may trade for if things haven't gone well for us, and you're watching major league teams who you anticipate not being competitive to get as many looks on those players as you can. Your analysts are pouring through mountains of data to try to parse something that's valuable for us. Maybe there's something that we can help or something that we're not seeing or something that the surface numbers don't line up with the indicators. Then you deploy your staff, you study the numbers, you begin to just bear down on players that you think could really fit for you. And then as teams evolve, teams are better than expected or worse than expected, or you're better or worse than expected, you evolve your strategy over the course of the summer. We meet as a group in early July. We bring in all of our professional scouts, and we identify the targets that they've liked over their coverage, the guys that we've identified from the office. You redeploy them out and get second and third and fourth looks sometimes on the players that you've identified. And then just the conversations begin to happen. I don't have all of the conversations. Kevin Graves is our assistant GM. He'll have a handful. Our pro scouts will talk to their counterparts, our major league scouts, our special assistants. And so there's conversations really happening on all fronts. Some of it's accurate information. Some of it's misinformation. But you're trying to get a feel for what teams are looking to do and players that might be available or players that they really seem to be high on or players maybe that they're down on a little bit. And you're looking to try to identify the targets, and then the conversation chatter picks up in about the middle of July, typically after the All-Star game. The chatter starts to pick up, and sometimes, as we've seen, there's been a few trades prior to that. The earlier the trade tends to be the higher the price tag, and as you get closer to the deadline, now we'll bring all of our scouts and special assistants, and we'll be in a conference room, and we'll beat up Proposal X or a creative thought Y. Take it from anybody in our room. If they've got a creative thought that can make this organization, make this club better, we'll research it, go through it, put our pref list together so that in a perfect world, when a club calls or we call a club and there's something live, that we're ready to move. And we know that this is the first player on our list or this is the fifth player on our list, but this acquisition cost makes it a better acquisition for us than maybe the first player on our list who they want something different. That last week becomes a little bit reactionary in that you may be moving down one pathway thinking you're closing on a deal and the club changes direction and shifts on you. Something may pop up at the last minute. We may discover there's an alignment when we didn't think there was, and so you just need to be ready to go and pref lists and analysis done and creativity. You're looking for people that have creative minds that are willing to put some thoughts out there and throw some random things out there because sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. The other part of it is the number of conversations that we have that will never lead to anywhere. We've had trade conversations before. We've had probably 75 to 100 different exchanges and never came to a trade. And we've had a situation where it was an exchange of three texts and we came to agreement on a trade. So you just don't know. And There's a ton of work. There's a ton of things go beyond behind that goes on behind the scenes, and but leading up to the deadline, it needs to be submitted by 3:59 and 59 seconds on July 31st. Otherwise, it's an invalid trade. Even if you beg and plead and tell them both teams want it, it wasn't submitted. And so there's the actual agreement process, and then there's a medical records review. And that's actually typically where things start to leak out a little bit is between the medical records review and getting to the players. That's why you see trades leak out is the club will call player X, tell him he's been traded, and that's when it leaks. And if there's a five-player trade, sometimes that poor fifth player may or may not be aware by the club that he's been traded. But that's how leaks happen is typically it happens after the first player has been told he's been traded. That's when the media tends to get a hold of the trade leaks.
So if we see a deadline deal, a deal that it doesn't get announced maybe till 4:30, which we've seen with the Pirates even in the last few years as the tarp's being pulled right now, this trade has been consummated much prior to the deadline and reviewed and vetted and everything. It's just maybe you don't make the final decision until very late, right before the deadline, and then it trickles out.
Yeah,
is that how that works?
We are a deadline-driven society, and there are times where that yes comes at 3:58. Both parties do what they need to do, whether it's an email, whether it's an entry into the Major League Baseball records system. And then you're waiting for confirmation that, one, it got in on time. You're waiting for confirmation if there's money involved, that there's some administrative details that need to be worked through. And then ultimately from there, once it's approved, now you've got to reach the players. And we always work to reach the players before we announce a trade or before the other team announces a trade.
You don't want to find out on your phone that you got to
exactly,
move.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why sometimes there is a delay is player X, Y, or Z may not be reachable or may not have been reached yet or maybe in the middle of a game. And there's some time that takes that. But, yes, absolutely, that trade was submitted by 3:59:59. Otherwise, it's not a valid trade.
It warms us up for the deadline coming up. We got a little insight from Neil Huntington. We'll rejoin him next here on the Pirates pregame here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Chatting with Neil Huntington on the Neil Huntington Show. Pirates and Phillies coming up in just a little bit. Darío Agrasal gets the start today, the native of Panama. And with he and Luis Escobar, also from Colombia, making his Major League debut here recently, got me to think about the Pirates' international plans. Most recent signing window starting back on July 2nd, so it's that kind of time of year. How are things going with the Pirates' international development? Are any philosophies changed in recent years? Junior Vizcaíno now directing that department. What's new, or is it staying the course? Kind of give us maybe a synopsis of what the Pirates' plans are, and how do you grade what you're seeing in terms of the development here now that there are a couple of guys here at the big league level?
Sure, it's a great question, and a challenging part of the question is we obviously had to make a leadership change in our international department. So want to give Rene Gallo due for Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco and now Escobar and Agrasal, players that were signed under his watch. And unfortunately, due to some inappropriate activity, we had to make a change. When you make a change, you have the opportunity to even get better. And again, respect Rene for what he did. There's a handful of players on this club that are signed by him, and our development staff did a great job. And that's the bottom line, is it goes to more than just one good scout. It's all about development and good scouting and combining those two things as best you can. We're fortunate to have one of the best facilities in the Dominican Republic, and actually we're expanding upon it. To make it even better, to be able to house two teams down there with the bonus situation in Latin America. There's a ceiling to what you can spend, and we're typically among the highest because of our small payroll. But everybody's got a level playing field. It's a matter of, do you choose to give one player $3 million or do you choose to give 10 players $300,000? And how do you deploy that money? And with Junior Vizcaíno and his leadership and some transitions that we're making down there, Junior came in. And unfortunately, when you see a bunch of players sign on July 2nd, there were agreements in place well before that. And one of the negatives of the industry right now is that we're agreeing to terms with 15-year-olds. And we're agreeing to terms in some organizations, not us, but we're agreeing to terms with 14-year-olds. And there are some organizations that are scouting 13- and 12-year-olds. And And that's not ideal. It's something that the industry is taking a look at, and is there a better way to do it? So when Junior came in, when he came in, he was essentially already behind last year's class because the best players had already agreed to terms, and yet we feel like we've got a lot of really good players out of last year's class. This July 2nd class, again, it's about a 50-50 scenario where the majority of the best players had already agreed to terms, and yet we really feel this is one of our best classes in recent history, and are excited about the athletes and excited about the potential bodies and the frames that they can turn into athletic bodies with size and strength. We're excited about the tools and guys who can hit and can hit with some power, guys who can run and play defense, guys who can and show velocity or show the ability to spin a breaking ball. But we really like the projectability of this class and again, the tools, the athletes, the aptitude, the drive that these young players have. And our group as a whole feels that this class is one of the best we've had in years.
Does it give you a good sense of pride? Let's say Agresol comes up, starts the year in AA. Panama is not obviously a baseball hotbed per se. I mean, it's a smaller country, so there's just not as many people there. But there are, of course, the Pirates, a great history. We saw three last night from that country. But or Colombia, same thing. I guess that's emerging now, of course. But when you see guys coming from those countries, smaller countries, or at least smaller baseball countries, and like you're saying, you're talking about guys that you're looking at 15 years old and then 16. You have to do a lot of educated guesswork before they become a major league player. They have to do a lot of work too. There has to be a lot of development. I would think you've got to be very proud when those guys do make it, because it's a 6, 7, 8 year process.
Absolutely, because you recognize so many people are involved in making that happen. That the regional scout, whether it's from the Dominican or the guy that covers Colombia, and it's a continual reminder that we need to be not just in the Dominican Republic or not just in Venezuela, as challenging it is to scout in Venezuela right now, but we need to be all over the world. And again, through Junior's leadership, we've continued to expand our opportunities and our staff and the quality of our staff, understand exactly what we believe will project and develop into good major league players. It's a worldwide game, and we continue to get reminded of that. And the number of people, whether it's a trainer, a strength coach, a physical therapist, let alone just the coaches that are going to impact, an analyst that will identify that a pitcher can do something a little bit better, and then that pitching coach going to apply that. And you're right. I mean, that's the hard part is we're excited about this class. And we've got a group of 16, a few 17s, and a few 18-year-olds in this class. They're 8 years away from making an impact on the major league team. And that's the hard part, is to be patient about that. But international signings are hugely important to any organization, but especially a small market.
We'll take a break. One final chat with Neil Huntington right after this here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Back for a final wrap here on the Neil Huntington Show. Pirates and Phillies getting set for the finale here. Coming up in just a little bit. Wanted to ask you, the Hall of Fame inductions are today. And since every morning I got the two kids that wake me up and I feel old, I want to make you feel old today. No, but I accomplished is the word I probably should use. I'm kidding. But so I was thinking, have you wondered or thought about some of the guys that are being inducted today, and maybe in years past, but probably starting about now, are guys that you probably have scouted and saw at least maybe the early parts of their professional careers going forward. What do you think about that as you look at your standing in the game and how long you've been able to do what you want to do for a living?
Yeah, last year's class with Jim Thome and Vladimir Guerrero was the first class that I've had tangible association with. Again, I was a peon and assistant farm director with the Montreal Expos, and the best thing that I did for Vladimir Guerrero during his time with the Expos was hand him a meal money envelope and make sure that he was fed. And actually English as a second language classes and just his continuing education and growth off the field. I do take great pride in the programs that we were trying to put in place back then, much better today than they were back then. Jim Thome, just the ability to watch and enjoy his, just who he is as a person. So that was the first class that hit me right between the eyes with guys that I've been on their teams. And again, whether I was in a assistant farm director role or a farm director role or even an assistant GM role, It was fascinating, and that was probably the first one that I had a draw to go watch and to go to the ceremony, even though I'm still in the game. It's just, and the tough part is it's typically right around the trade deadline, so it's impossible. And it makes you realize you've been in the game a while, and would you say accomplished?
Accomplished.
I don't know if accomplished is the word. Old is probably better served for it, but it does. It takes your breath away a little bit to remember watching Vladimir Guerrero in the Florida State League on a nightly basis, or watching him in his first instructional league and just seeing those long arms and that incredible arm strength and the incredible bat speed and his ability to hit a breaking ball in the dirt out to right center field off an A-ball pitcher, or moving to Cleveland and becoming a part of the Indians and just learning what an amazing person and the incredible power hitter that Jim Thome is, and to be able to get to know them and to see them and to say hello is kind of cool. That those are the best in the game, and I had a very, 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 very small part. I don't think there's enough varies to describe how small a part I played, but to know that I was on their team is pretty cool.
And we got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask you about Brian Reynolds as the tarp is getting rolled up, so it looks like we should be starting on time or close to it here today. And he might get enough plate appearances to qualify for the batting title. He's 5 points behind Jeff McNeil as play starts today, hitting .340 still. What if he wins a batting title? I looked at it. The National League rookie to win a batting title is 1878 when that
wow.
happened. And that was a 60-game season. So you could say he'd be the first. Now, a lot of things have to happen to get there. But what he's done so far, even your best hopes, this is probably something that you would think, in the true sense of the word, awesome. Do you get wowed sometimes as a GM, as much baseball as you've seen?
Yeah, you try to take his demeanor, which is just you don't know if he went 0 for 4 or if he's 4 for 4 with two home runs, and he just shows up and he's going to go give a good at bat. He's going to go help his team win. And if you had said at the start of the year that Jeff McNeil and Brian Reynolds will be battling for a batting championship, that's what's so beautiful about our game, is we think player X, Y, and Z are going to be great, and every year there's players that exceed expectations, and unfortunately there's players that fall short of expectations. But when we traded for Brian Reynolds, we felt like he was going to be a really good hitter. We felt like he was a good all-around player, obviously intelligent, comes from a great program with Coach Corbin there in Vanderbilt, and so we believed he was going to be a really good major league player. Yes, he's exceeded our expectations in his rookie season. Now, unfortunately, set the bar high, so we've got to continue to work with him to help him evolve and continue to grow as a really good major league player in person.
Well, he's been fun, and thanks for spending some time with us. I know this is a busy time of year. Look forward to hearing what you say next week, too.
Absolutely.
All right, Neil Huntington on the Neil Huntington Show. We got baseball for you coming up. Pirates and Phillies. Pirates looking to take the series, and we'll have that for you coming up right here on the Pirates Baseball Network. An annual